Which city is the world's deadliest? Any city in the world, which do you think it is? Well, it's San Pedro Sula in Honduras. The Central American country is not much bigger than Virginia, with a population of 8 million, but more than 1,200 people were killed there last year. You may already know this because for the past couple weeks, NPR reporters have been traveling across Latin America to report on violence and crime, and Carrie Kahn just got back from Honduras. Well, today we want to take a peek into her reporter's notebook. She joins us from her home base in Mexico City. Carrie, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me.
And what a fascinating fact. Start with the why. Why is San Pedro Sula so deadly?
Well, there's a lot of factors in it. Let's start with geography first. San Pedro Sula is about an hour's drive to the Caribbean coast of Honduras, which is about 400 miles, pretty much undeveloped and open water, and right in the middle of the traffic that comes from South American cocaine traffickers. They can stop in Honduras with relative ease, no problems, and then they're on their way to Mexico and into the lucrative U.S. market, cocaine market. We heard from the State Department, this is an incredible figure, that 42% of all cocaine headed to the U.S. transits Honduras, and 90% of cocaine flights out of Colombia and South America stop in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, the Honduran area. So it's mostly geography. There's other factors. The gang violence situation that's happening right now in Honduras, a lot of gang members were deported from the United States, mainly from Los Angeles, where a lot of these gangs got their start. You see a lot of gang members there. I think they said there's 65,000 gang members in Honduras. So you have a criminal element there, you have drug traffickers, and you have geography, and then you also have a very weak government.
Well, there must be, because if you know that all of this is happening in this one city, you'd think that the government could go in and do something about it, or that the U.S. might get involved. You mentioned that thousands of these gang members, many were deported from the U.S. Has the U.S. tried to have direct involvement in these problems?
It's a very controversial issue right now. The United States is limited in what it can do because Congress has invoked what it's called the Leahy Amendment, that you cannot fund actors in a country that have allegations of human rights abuses. So a lot of the money that was being funded to the police for reform, for institution building, for investigation stuff has been held up by Congress. The U.S. State Department is still investing money in Honduras. They say there are trustworthy actors that they can work with, but it's very controversial.
Well, and yet you found a ray of hope. When you were there, the two largest gangs in the country declared a truce, zero crime, zero violence. Did it stick? How did people react to that? And how did they get there?
That, again, is as everything is, it's a complicated situation. They didn't really call it a truce. It was very, for lack of a better word, squishy. Like you said, they said zero crime, zero violence. But these two gangs that we're talking about, the Mara Salvatrucha and the 18th Street Gang, have caused so much violence in this country that residents are traumatized. As you said from the outset, San Pedro Sula is very violent. Honduras itself is very violent. 20 people a day die in Honduras. So people were very, very skeptical when they heard these two gangs call I call it a ceasefire rather than a truce. They didn't really address each other. And what was most interesting about this announcement was they were press conferences, and these press conferences were given in the San Pedro Sula prison. So in one wing, we went to a press conference by the Mara Salvatrucha, and then about half an hour later, we were ushered over to the other side of the prison where the 18th Street Gang gave their press conference. We kept pressing them, saying, okay, you say zero crime, zero violence, but what does that mean? Are you going to stop all extortion right now? Because how else is the gang going to survive? That's how they survive, is by extorting the population. And they said, we're telling you, zero crime, zero violence. So if you talk to the mediators of this ceasefire, they were the Catholic Church there in San Pedro Sula, and actually somebody from the Organization of American States. And they said, look, this has been a war zone. This is sort of like a peace process. It's the first step. It's not going to be immediately the best thing that ever happened, and it's going to stick. But it is the first step in a long process of acknowledging the violence and starting to come to an end of it.
Well, Honduras is going to be electing a new president in November. Do you think there's room for progress, or will it be same old, same old?
It's a very interesting situation. The government that is in there right now was one that was elected after the coup. It is more of a centrist, more of one that has been tied to the elites in Honduras, one that has been seen as very weak, has done little to ameliorate the violent situation. It'll be interesting. It's very hard for opposition candidates to campaign in Honduras. We'll have to see what happens. I was waiting to see an incredibly poor country. It is a poor country. It's the second poorest in the hemisphere after Haiti. But it is not, when you go to Tegucigalpa, the capital, it is no Port-au-Prince. You see construction. There was road construction, bridges being built. Honduras has just floated $500 million bond on the international bond market. And they are investing in road construction, infrastructure, and short-term job creation. And this is, all, many said cynically, as a lead-up to these elections, to create short-term wealth and jobs to sort of ingratiate the regime that's in there right now. So I think it's going to be very complicated for the opposition, and we'll have to wait and see what happens in November.
Hey, Carrie, one last question. As you return to your home base in Mexico City after your reporting in Honduras, your thoughts on what we are feeling here, that I don't think people knew about Honduras and the cocaine trade and its connection to the United States. I mean, we think a lot about Mexico and drug wars, and yet I don't think most Americans think about this.
It's interesting because what sparked us to do this series on violence in Latin America was if you looked at an index of the most violent places in the world, what do you think of? Syria, of course, or Iraq, Afghanistan. But in the top 20, the majority of the countries are in Latin America: Caracas, Honduras, São Paulo. You know, we were surprised by that too. So we wanted to look at more of the roots of the violence there. But if you look at Mexico, Mexico is very far down on the list, much farther than Honduras or Venezuela or Sao Paulo, these other cities. And I think it's our proximity to the U.S., our closeness with Mexicans in the U.S. that we focus more on Mexico. But, you know, this is an aside. My mother lives in Santa Monica, California, and she was so scared of me coming to Mexico to live. And I could tell you, you know, it was just 2 weeks ago, there was a gunman that was shooting people in her neighborhood in Santa Monica, California. So violence is all relative. And in my neighborhood where I live, you know, I walk around at night and I feel perfectly safe. In Mexico, there are very dangerous parts of the country. There are very parts that are very safe. You know, even when I was in Honduras, people were saying, oh, you live in Mexico. Isn't it so dangerous and scary? So it is very relative where you are.
Carrie Kahn, NPR's correspondent in Mexico City. Thanks so much. Fascinating.
Thank you for having me and your interest in the region.
Okay, a quick look ahead. Tomorrow and Here Now, we're going to be on Supreme Court Watch. Some big cases still to be decided. Also, Kanye West has a new baby and a new album. We'll check out the album. That's tomorrow. And in a minute, the Kanye West and Jay-Z of the 1800s, Wagner and Verdi, Here and Now.